and welcome to Access All Areas with Dermot and Felicity. I'm Myra Access, Dermot Devlin, and with me always is the chronically fabulous Felicity McKee.
This week we're going to be exploring public transport, accessibility, and all the issues that come with using public transport as a disabled person, specifically focusing on our own personal experiences of using planes, trains, and automobiles. Just to get a wee movie reference in there. But first up, we're going to be exploring some news items that we saw during the week that have caught our interest. So, Dermot, what have you seen that might be of interest?
Well, this week, I've just been following the fallout today from the Republican National Congress regarding North Carolina 11th Congressional District Republican nominee Madison Cawthorn. He gave what he believed to be a very empowering message for his audience. And at the end, he got out of his wheelchair to stand to drive home a point. To me, it emphasized that I'm disabled, but the National Republican Party are going to make me non-disabled. And it sent out the wrong ableist message to the audience, not just to the audience and to the world, that many, many disabled people across the world from all different sort of parties and backgrounds found very offensive.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of issues with it. One, it was very choreographed. It was a stunt. It kind of suggests, you know, being non-disabled or appearing to be non-disabled by standing is a normative thing that disabled people want or would desire. There's been videos I saw in the last week of a little girl with cerebral palsy who was climbing up the stairs, and it was sent around Twitter as if it was inspirational, whereas people who have cerebral palsy were saying they had forced themselves to do similar things and they were now paying for it years later with damage that had caused their bodies by trying to force themselves to do stuff that they physically were not able to do. But I think specifically with this stunt, there was the fact that it was seen as offensive and is offensive to the disabled community, but also to people of color in the Black Lives Matter movement, because it kind of was a mix of ableism and racism all packaged into one in a form of performative inspiration porn. He chose to stand up in that manner to sort of suggest that other people should stand for the flag. And it was kind of implied that if he, as a disabled person, can stand for the flag, that other people should stand too, and that they have no excuse, even though people who are choosing to kneel for the flag are doing so for a political reason. And in fact, Colin Kaepernick actually spoke to a US veteran before he chose to kneel to see what was the most respectful way to go forward with this. I have to lay my cards on the table first. I have stood once while using a wheelchair while doing a speech, but I did it because I was exploring issues of visibility and disability. And my point when I stood was to explain that even when I'm standing, because I am an ambulatory wheelchair user, I am still a disabled person. And whereas in this, it's so much more layered and problematic. And like, I'm not saying that standing during a speech doesn't necessarily have issues and that some people could theoretically see that as inspiration. But within the context of mine, it was specifically highlighting the fact I was even wearing a high visibility jacket, that disabled people don't always wear a high visibility jacket like I was at that point. We're not always seen, and from a historical context, we tend to be forgotten in the archives. So like Florence Nightingale identified as disabled, but this isn't written into our history. So there was a point to what I was doing, whereas his is to do it in which it denigrates another marginalized group. And that's why it's so problematic. But I think it's also the fact shows as if, you know, you see it all the time where maybe someone's getting married and they choose to walk down the aisle, even though it's putting them into a lot of pain and stuff like this. And it becomes seen as normative or desirable to have that particular standard, when actually a lot of disabled people are happy as they are and in the bodies they're in.
Well, I think you were saying about when you were standing, but obviously you're an ambulatory wheelchair user. That's great. And that does make a huge difference for what you were doing to what was happening at the RNC this week. But it also just reinforces the idea, if you're disabled, that means that you're in a wheelchair. And if you're in a wheelchair, and this is the way they use, you're wheelchair bound is a horrific, it's one that I hate, and it's one that causes huge offense to so many disabled people. Yes, I'm in a wheelchair for the majority of the day, and the wheelchair is the device that I use 100% of the time to get about, but I'm not confined to, or I'm not bound to my wheelchair. I'm able to stand up for a few seconds if I need. I'm able to transfer myself from the chair to a sofa, or from my my chair to the bed. I'm not bound by it. It might have been put out there that if you're disabled, you can't do nothing.
And also, I find my wheelchair personally very liberating for being able to get out and about and to go places that I may not otherwise be able to on the days when I physically need to use my wheelchair. So the idea that you're bound to it or that it's limiting in some way can be a very reductionist view of the wheelchair and very problematic as well.
And then this sort of leap back, and I do think that this is what Madison, they were trying to do at the RNC, to make it out that he was confined to his wheelchair, he was wheelchair bound, but because he was so angry about political situations, able to will the power by what he believed was right, which I personally am, it was the wrong point to make, and it was the wrong way to make a point.
Yeah, so surely in a free society, you can protest in a manner, especially when it's a peaceful manner, however you choose. It is the fact that it is a marginalized person denigrating another marginalized person. And it's very ironic that it happens during a Republican National Convention, which is basically, it's kind of like a large party for Trump to endorse Trump for president, when Trump as a president has mocked disabled people. However, this does bring us on to a slightly different topic, but still sort of related to Trump, in the fact that while we're discussing the poor choice of this stunt by the Republican National Convention, that doesn't mean that some of the media depictions of Trump haven't been really problematic, especially when it comes to disability and the ableist language they've used to describe him.
Like I said, as I've been saying, that I was very annoyed about what I seen yesterday. Very upset by it and personally insulted. Some of the terminology, some of the caricatures that have been thrown at Trump over the last number of years. And I wouldn't class myself as a fan of Trump, but I find that just equally as offensive, because it's sort of, it's using me, it's using you as an excuse to beat somebody else to say that we're not able to do something like them. Now, whether you believe that Trump is able to be president or not, one matter. To show that he's not able to do it because he might be perceived as disabled, whether that's physically disabled or mentally unwell, then that's, to me, it's not right, it's uncalled for. And it's extremely offensive.
Yeah, especially when you see media mocking him for maybe needing a little bit of assistance to walk down a ramp, or the fact that he maybe used two hands to hold on to a glass of water. And the thing is, when people say are using this, what they're doing is they're seeing disability as negative, and they're using disability as a way to disparage the president, which you can argue about someone's politics, but this is not something that should be joked about. And the fact is, there have been disabled presidents before. Franklin D. Roosevelt was a wheelchair user. And in fact, fun fact, the doorways of the White House are extra wide because they were designed to make way for his wheelchair.
I never was aware of that.
So, you know, it's just, it's quite sad and disheartening to see the normalization of the mocking of Trump from an ableist lens, because you can disagree with someone on their politics and on a lot of different issues. I don't really see why mocking someone for maybe having an underlying illness, because we don't know. We don't know what Trump's medical history is. Like, we have no right necessarily to know. That's private between a person and their doctor. But at the same time, I don't understand this drive to mock Trump. Like, Trump himself has mocked disabled people. That was wrong when he did it. But it's also wrong to then mock Trump from an ableist perspective and using disability as a way to mock him.
As I say, like, no two wrongs make a right, and it's certainly to get it out through. As I say, we can't sit here and make a podcast criticizing Trump for what he did without quite rightly highlighting some of the stuff that's been thrown back at Trump, because they're equally wrong and equally offensive. But you'd actually raised earlier a point earlier for the podcast about how one manner that Trump is making his tale accessible for the visually impaired.
Yeah, so Trump has been noted in the past, there was an architect who claimed that Trump actually, it's against federal law to remove Braille from inside elevators or lift. He had the Braille removed, and when he was told this was illegal, he said that no blind people would be in Trump Tower. So, like, he just doesn't have a good track record. And I do wonder if maybe some of the tokenistic gestures at the RNC were maybe partly because they know that he has this history where it comes to disabled people.
He was saying it wasn't just Madison, wasn't the only disabled candidate that was up that night, and I do believe it was the only night that there was disabled candidates were speaking.
Or so, a person who we know was disabled.
But I just felt it was a little bit choreographed, a little bit planned, and even when you take this other candidate out of it, even when we had Madison getting up to stand, we had the two people coming in to help him and to give him the aid to stand with. That just looked a little bit too pitch perfect, as if it was rehearsed several times. So it was well engineered in advance and well scheduled and well choreographed.
Yeah, Yeah, so like in regards to when I tried to stand up, I near fell flat on my face. It was not very graceful at all. I was very nervous doing the speech, but for me, it was really important. And we haven't really discussed my research on the podcast, but my research is kind of disability and with a focus on issues of visibility in the past. And so it was really important for me to highlight the fact, even when I'm not necessarily visibly disabled, I'm still a disabled person. And so if you were to remove the wheelchair, I still remain a disabled person. And so that was my point in that situation. But like, for me, I just can't quite get past the fact that he was using, or at least it felt like he was using his disability almost as a shield. So yeah, you couldn't criticize him when he then criticized Black Lives Matter.
That definitely seems like a very strong intention behind it. But a lot of people, something that I don't agree with, but a lot of people take issue that they don't want to criticize somebody that's disabled because they do perceive that if you just criticize something that I say or you say in the podcast or outside in the real world, we might think that you're criticizing us because we are disabled. And that's not the case. We know that you're criticizing the point that we're making. But Trump and Madison realize that people think like that. So they think, well, they can't be attacked. And if they were attacked, then they can turn that around and say that the people attacking them, and they don't matter about the Black Lives Matter attacking them because they are the ones that are in fact ableist.
Yeah, it's just a massively problematic. It's just massively problematic as a whole, how it was carried out. Also, like the media representation that's followed with it. Any criticism of the actual standing up has been seen as wrong to criticize, whereas many in the disabled community are criticizing it. They are calling it out. And I think the problem is we have such an idea that disability is some sort of negative or a tragedy when it isn't.
I think that really we've sort of covered quite a bit there now about the RNC and Madison and his political stunt. We might draw a line there. Well, I think that really comes to the end of this. For now, we're going to head into the main topic, which is public transport for disabled people. We will see you after this short break. Welcome back. As this part of the podcast now, we're going to be talking about public transport and disabled people. So Felicity, we're coming from both different aspects. I'm sort of working along the buses here in the Northern Ireland, but over in Wales you have a lot more impact with not only with buses, but you're using trains, aeroplanes as well.
Yeah, so because I'm travelling back and forth between both Southern Ireland, Northern Ireland and Wales when I'm going home, I tend to experience a lot of different systems and also tend to see more of the issues that occur within those systems. It does also mean that, as we were discussing prior to the show, I have a lot of cards. Having a disabled person's card for one bus service doesn't always mean that it will work on another bus service. So I have Northern Ireland cards, Welsh cards, Southern cards for everything, and cards for different buses, different trains. I almost have a purse solely for disabled persons cards. And you would think one would be enough, but it's not.
I couldn't believe that when you showed me the cards earlier, just how many you had. I mean, it was like you had a whole deck of planes cards, they were main travel cards.
Traveling, it does vary on different locations. So I think we will probably discuss buses first, because buses is something that you and I would tend to use more often than other public transport. Bus and coach drivers do have to give reasonable assistance for you to get on and off the bus, although this doesn't necessarily mean that they have to physically lift people or lift heavy mobility equipment.
But I know here in the North of Ireland that the jam card, which we have spoken about on a few occasions, that all the transling bus drivers are trained in how to use that card. So they do have sort of a bit of background information about background training and how to deal with disabled customers who are coming on the bus, you know, how to treat them, how to react, and, you know, how to do the simple procedures of moving a wheelchair. So I was wondering, is there any sort of procedures like that in place in England and Wales, which you'll be travelling quite regularly?
So the JAM card is recognised over here. In fact, there's also a JAM app. It's not something that I've seen used very often. The Sunflower Lanyard scheme seems to be coming. It seems to be more popular generally. It's recognised in Tesco and say like Morrison's and Sainsbury's, but it's also being recognised now in public transport, especially given the pandemic.
Well, would they have the sort of same sort of training? Like I know there was a JAM card, like if any business or company want to use it, you know, they get a bit of background training. But the lanyard, do the businesses and transport company, are they trained how to use it if somebody presents it to them?
So generally when the lanyard's used, you'll see them with Tesco, they tend to get their own branding on it. It does appear that they do get some training with it. They'll also have posters up saying that someone with this lanyard on may have an invisible disability. They may need a little bit extra time. It is quite a good scheme. Some people don't feel comfortable wearing something that marks them out as disabled. It's down to everybody's personal choice, but it can be very good for being able to get access needs met without necessarily having to communicate sometimes what feels like your entire medical history to a stranger.
Well, that's quite, you're saying people don't like to, you know, I can understand, maybe don't want to worry about it, going, hello, I'm disabled. Some people just mightn't be comfortable with that. But if you're saying, which is quite good, I believe as well, you know, you have a physical jam card, but then you would also have the app so people can discreetly show it without showing to the world that they might have certain disabilities or concerns that need to be addressed. So does the lanyard have anything similar to that, or is it just the physical lanyard that's worn?
The lanyard seems to be the most popular that I've seen. Obviously, the jam card is something that is over here, but I think the lanyard is more commonly used on sort of like in the rest of the UK than it would be, say, in Northern Ireland or Southern Ireland. Although the lanyard, when I first saw it, was mostly used at airports. It has expanded out since, but it's definitely one that I've seen more recognized. And I think with the pandemic, because it has been highlighted as a symbol for this, that many companies have taken it up. There are some like social distancing symbols for people who are disabled that have been wheeled out by wheels. To be honest, as a person who has been designing socially distanced badges that I've been selling on Etsy, the badges that have come out from the government aren't very clear. As in, if you saw it, you may not understand what it was trying to communicate to you, and it's been poorly advertised. There's different ways of trying to ensure that your access needs are met via these symbols when you're on public transport. But I mean, there's lots of different ways of doing that, and it does depend on the transport that you're using. So we were looking at bus passes, and this varies literally depending on where you are within UK or Southern Ireland. So with where I am in Wales, you apply to the local council and you get a free bus pass. And this is at any time of the day that you can travel on the bus. It also has Braille on the bus pass. And you can also get a companion pass. So if you need assistance or have a carer, they can travel with you as well. Although I believe in Northern Ireland, because I only have a half fare smart pass, that's what's available. Dermot, you might know more about this.
Well, there is certain cases where you can get a free pass. That's if you're a ward disability pensioner, or if you're over 60, or a few different other criteria. Mostly it is just half fare. So if you're on a mobility scheme for the DLA or PEPs and stuff like that, you will get it the half fare. Again, there's a bit of inconsistencies in it, but it's like compared to maybe other regions in the UK, other regions of Ireland. So there does need to be a little bit of uniformity there, because, you know, just because I'm here, like, why would I be missing out with something that other parts of the country or other parts of the place would be able to get? But it's something that we can work on, something we can develop. That all comes with having a voice with some of these organisations and sort of getting your point across. Like, for example, I don't know what sort of system they have in Wales for public transport, but I'm part of the working workshop group for the Inclusive Mobility and Transport Advisory Committee. And basically, it's a group of disabled people from across Northern Ireland, and they get together and they have meetings with TransLink to advise them on sort of different policies and different designs. So buses and trains, for example, like just recently we met for Redbus online, socially distant, of course, just to advise them on, you know, the next stage of buses that they're going to be designing and rolling out. But it's interesting what you said earlier about how some of the signs that the government are putting out about socially distant can be a little bit confusing and hard to read. But that's one of the things that we actually worked was MTAC a few weeks ago with TransLink, that they were going to be putting up socially distant signs on their buses and trains. And they wanted to just get our feedback on what it was like. And hopefully there's no point in me, they'll know what I'm talking about when we got what TransLink put back. It was okay, it wasn't great, but it was a bit confusing, and some of the terminology just mightn't have been right. I wouldn't say it was offensive, but it was sometimes it just made it just that uncomfortable with some people. But because we had this open dialogue and we were able to work with them, we were able to redesign the posters and redesign the ward and stuff like that. So council were quite happy what we were done. They're going to be rolling out across buses and trains quite shortly. So I don't know, like, does Wales have a public transport, have a body set up, like, and packed out a group of disabled people can come together and sort of work together with the transport to make them, not just as I say with designing, but actually future designs and policies so disabled people can have the full and inclusive access.
So I'm not aware of a specific organisation. I do know that WizKids has done some work with the Parliament over here. It does seem to be kind of based in the local area. So in Swansea, when they were redesigning the paths and the layout and also issues with public transport, they spoke to the Swansea Association of Independent Living. So it's not necessarily a national organization at times that is speaking to people about this. It can be more localized. I think it would be the same, say, up in Scotland. So like Scotland has the National Entitlement Card, which again is free travel on buses as well as for carers. And in England, they have a bus pass, but the bus pass in England only allows you free travel at certain times. So like at the weekend, it's free on a bank holiday. But if you are traveling during Monday to Friday in England, you're only getting 9:30 a.m. to 11 p.m. And so it is really important that organizations are speaking up about accessibility issues with transport. Disabled people do work, and a bus pass that doesn't allow you to get to work before 9:30 in the morning is not much use.
Unfortunately, that seemed to be the comments which happened with the disabled people, either don't work or don't want to work. So they're not putting the infrastructure in place for the physically able to get out there and get to places of employment. So that's something that I don't know whether it's an attitude of if we're all in benefits and can't work or don't want to work. Or, and again, as well, that because we maybe like, I don't know about just many other people, but I'm sort of working part-time because physically that's all I'm able to do. What would happen there is that I would actually end up being losing money if I was paying to go on the bus every day, twice a day, go to and from work. There are schemes in place to help sort of kind of act that. I have to get a bus or a taxi sorry to work, so you get the work track program, which helps refund it, but they'll refund it to the cost of what a bus fare would be. So it still leaves a bit of a cash flow tight at the end of the month.
Yeah, so like I was looking at the travel scheme down south. So there is a free travel scheme and it's all public transport that's owned by the state. So bus, rail, and that could be the Lewis up in Dublin. But it does seem a bit complicated in how to access it. So, you know, it's specifically and mostly advertised and aimed at people who are over the age of 66. But you can get it if you're under 66. But you have to get registered with SAFE and then you will automatically get awarded your card if you have the invalidity pension, you have a blind pension, a disability allowance, or a carer's allowance. But again, you have to then be able to access those allowances and those benefits. And this is the thing, not everybody can access certain benefits and certain allowances. And so that can be a barrier for people who would really benefit from having more accessible travel and cheaper travel, because we've previously mentioned in the podcast that on average disabled people are facing an extra £500 expenses a month. And you know, one of the things with buses, and it's not solely specific to buses, but while your bus pass will work on local buses or state-owned buses, private companies are completely different. So with National Express, I have to pay for a separate disabled person's card that only works with National Express. And with Megabus, I have to book in advance. I can't just show up and get on the bus. And I mean, this is an issue you've had as well, that there's not very much available in the way of disabled seats or accessible seats on a bus. And if you don't book in advance, you may not be able to get on the bus. And it also then means that if you miss your bus, you get stuck somewhere.
Again, that is quite a regular occurrence for me. With regard, for example, up in Belfast, I wouldn't say that it's perfect for buses, but they are a lot more disabled friendly. You wouldn't have the same sort of wait time or restrictions of catching a bus. And then recently as well, with the new glider system, which is basically that the Impact, which I spoke about earlier, consulted with TransLink on the overall design of the bus. So they were able to implement it, because a lot of these buses now, what you see is you've only got one space for wheelchair users.
And it usually has a pram in it.
Pardon? Pretty much, yes. So what happened there is the disabled people was on Amtrak had consulted with TransLink and was in the design process. So we were able to get a second space for wheelchair users in it. But not only that, like as you see, we had the important point about usually finding a pram in it, that we have the two wheelchair spaces, but they also have a space for a pram as well. So this is like some of the important things that disabled people can provide to the transport system. Again, like another system that we're trying to roll out now across all transport in the north of Ireland, but what has been included now in TransLink because of the conversation, is the AAV, which is the audiovisual interface. People that might have sensory issues, you know, wouldn't be able to be aware of it. Of what bus station or bus stop they're coming up for. So they'll get a visual sign and an audio sign within the bus saying, in 2 minutes, we're coming up to the stop. And when we get there, we'll be able to tell them, you can in part now get off the bus. So little things like that are important. But as you say, like I've had issues because Belfast is quite good, but I'm down here in West Tyrone, which is quite rural. West Tyrone, like in Tyrone, Fermanagh wouldn't have the same number of buses as you would have in the east of the band, because of the infrastructure is quite poor. So if I wanted to get a bus to go to the next town or go to the next up to certain areas, maybe Belfast, I would have to book it maybe 24, 48 hours in advance, which might suit some people. But again, what I find is it takes the, I can't be spontaneous in my life. Like my friends could say, oh, we're going to go to Derry today, or we're going to go to Belfast today. And even then, if I wanted to go to Dublin, look, I would go to Comic-Con quite regularly. So I know that if I wanted to go on the bus to Comic-Con or maybe to go see a show, I have to book it. Not 48 hours in advance, 2 weeks in advance, which is absolutely ridiculous. And there's no harm what I'd love to do, because I've got friends in Dublin and I never see them because I have no way down and back up again. And these are things that need to be addressed as well. It's not only buses are accessible for wheelchair users, but they are in places where wheelchair users and disabled people can get on them.
Yeah, so like there is community transport options, so like rural transport. But again, you know, it doesn't really replace the fact that non-disabled people can just hop onto a bus or train when they want. They don't have to book in advance. And I think in an ideal world, and hopefully the world that we're slowly working towards together, that will be the case soon enough, because it's a similar issue with trains, with having to book in advance and book assistance. So I know that the half Smart Fare Pass in Northern Ireland works on the trains, because obviously TransLink run the buses at the trains, and it's half price for a single ticket. So it's a single both ways. Whereas over here in Wales, my bus pass does work on some local trains, but they wouldn't be the main trains. Like they're not something that I see very often or I would use very often. So I have to have a disabled person's rail card, which gets me a third off rail tickets. Now, granted, train tickets over here are very expensive, really expensive actually. So I think with a third off, it's maybe, depending on the time of day I go, it could be £8-10, I think, plus to Cardiff, and that's with a discount. But the one good thing about this is obviously some systems will have that you're allowed to have a companion with you. And with the disabled person's rail card, you also get a discount for the person who is traveling with you. So if you want to buy the card, because you have to pay for it and it isn't free, it's £20 for a single year, or it's £54 for 3 years. And if you actually think about the cost of the trains over here, you do make that money back if you do use the train quite regularly. But again, there's the issues of the fact that with a train, you have to book in advance. You have to then hope they remember that you're on the train so that you can get off the train. I find it very nerve-wracking, to be honest, when I do take the train, because I depend on public transport to get to the train station, and then I depend on going through the train. So with the London Underground, for example, they do have an accessible route, but they've reduced the number of staff that are on the ground. So if you're not familiar with the layout and you don't know where you're going, it can be very overwhelming and quite distressing, and you can get lost very easily. And I think that's one of the main issues I find with when you're in any sort of large train station, is sometimes the staff aren't on the ground. So if you are forgotten on a train, there's no one to sort of flag or to say, please help me get off. In fact, I've missed my stop on occasion because there has been no ramp provided.
Well, as you said earlier in the podcast, that I would be quite knowledgeable when it comes to buses here in the North of Ireland. But when it comes to trains, that's a completely different story, because if anybody ever looks at the map of Ireland and sees the rail infrastructure, there's a big gap in the northwest, and I live in the middle of that big gap. So unfortunately, I'm unable to use the trains, because there is no train for me to get on. If I want to get a train, I have to get a taxi or bus to the local train station, which is over an hour away in Portadown. Now, again, if the infrastructure was put in place, it would make the life a lot easier for disabled people, that they wouldn't have to get a bus, especially if they're going for the longer journey that I would like to be doing, to Dublin or go to Galway or stuff like that. I'm happy enough with the bus, you know, travelling around like today in Belfast. But for a longer journey, you know, it can be quite painful and sore sitting on a bus. So when you have a train, there's an extra level of comfort. Then you consider a bit more movement in the train. Now, actually, one of the things I actually had planned to do this summer, you know, at the beginning of August, was because I had never been on a train here in this part of the world, that I was actually going to do my Reaccess video tour, you know, document my train journey just to see what the rail network is like here with TramLink. But unfortunately, the coronavirus had other ideas, so I've been sat inside. But it is a journey that I'm going to try and make at some point, whenever I think that it went for here. So I'm quite limited when it comes to that. But I have been in trains in Dublin and stuff like that, you know, like local trains, the Dart system. And I find them to be reasonably accessible. I know different disabled people who've travelled through the trains up here told me that they've never had any issues. But again, I don't want to comment on that, because I've never actually used the trains here, and that's one of the reasons that I wanted to tour, because we were way in the good days. Actually, that's not reality. But Felicity, I'm sure you probably have used the trains more here than I would have.
So I think TransLink's quite good on this, but I think one of the benefits to TransLink is obviously we only have TransLink running the trains in Northern Ireland. So when I'm in Wales, if I book assistance and I have maybe a couple of trains, so say I'm traveling somewhere in England, I may have two different train companies running the trains that I'm getting on if I have a connection. And it means I have to book assistance on different trains with different train companies. So there's no single standard. So say if Virgin Trains has been absolutely brilliant, then Transport for Wales might be my next train, but they may not be great. They might have forgotten me. And so there can be more issues, and I think there's more work involved with booking the assistance when you're over here, and more potential hiccups happening. TransLink has been quite good, and I think their training's good, but I mean, obviously you're involved in an organization that is working with TransLink. So TransLink does appear to be an organisation that at least on the surface is listening.
Well, they definitely look listening to us, and they're sort of implementing a lot of the things we've said. But you know, again, it's an ongoing process. And again, it's not something that happened overnight. Like, as I say, I've been trying to get more buses down here to Mananoma area, and at the moment, it's just not happening. But again, what's the impact that I'm able to have this conversation with TransLink and keep putting pressure on them? I don't want to say too much at this stage, but it looks like with some of the pressure that I've been putting on, and some of the pressure that the great man from Tyrone called Aaron McCain, who runs Transport for All in Castlederg. So between the three of us, we've had a bit of pressure on them. And I do believe there might be a bit of movement in the early stages of 2021, but it's not confirmed yet. But hopefully we'll get a few more buses by then. But like I say, it's the conversation needs to be there. And as you say, it's working on a local level in Wales, but I do think it needs to be more nationally in Wales, this conversation, because, you know, you might get some great movement in Swansea, but then Cardiff could be falling behind. So there's a bit of inconsistency, because you do want to have a smooth travel when you're travelling from, not only from city to city or town to town, but between different companies, between different rail network and bus networks. Because as you say, like, it's great that TransLink, we have TransLink, and they're the ones servicing the issues there, which is fantastic. But then, as I say, you kind of have to counteract that with the fact that then they don't have any competition. So it kind of swings and roundabout. But I think overall, I think it's better having a singular one that you don't have maybe some of the bigger, greater issues that you would face, Felicity.
Well, yeah. And one of the things that you can do as a disabled person when you're using trains is you can look up the Disabled People's Protection Policy, because every train company has to have one. So you can actually see what that train company is doing for disabled people before you travel. And it's one of the things that I do. I always plan my journey ahead, and it can be a bit of a dry read, sometimes, but it is important to have a look at these things. But like, trains aren't the only form of public transport that we use. Well, I know you, you use taxis maybe a lot more than I would.
Well, as I said, one of the main reasons I would use taxis more than you would use is because that bicycles, I think, fair enough, is the time sort of in the rural southwest was in a monthly manner. So the buses aren't always there when I want them, and there's absolutely no infrastructure when it comes to the rail network. So you are reliant on the taxi service. And in a lot of cases, you know, unless you know the company and unless you know the driver, it could be additional cost on top of what non-disabled people would meet. And that could be fare and a half, which is a bit unfortunate for us. And you'd actually raised a good point to me earlier that you might book a bus or you might move a taxi and not specify did you want a wheelchair one. And I just think it's a good point. Maybe you'd like to share with our listeners.
Yeah, so basically, if you're a non-disabled person and you phone for a taxi and a wheelchair accessible taxi shows up, you just pay the ordinary fare for that taxi. You're not charged extra because that is a wheelchair accessible vehicle. If you are a disabled person and you phone for a wheelchair accessible taxi, you'll probably be waiting a longer time than a non-disabled person would be waiting for a taxi. But when the taxi shows up, you're more likely to be charged fare and a half and have additional expenses for the taxi because they will claim that because the vehicle is more specialized, it costs them more and they're passing on the additional costs of that to the customer, which, to be honest, should be illegal. And I think in some areas it might actually be illegal. It has been challenged a few times. It does seem vastly unfair, but I mean, it's not the only issue that disabled people are facing when it comes to taxis. Taxi drivers have at times refused guide dogs and service animals, even though they can face up to a £1,000 fine because it's illegal and it's discrimination. And the only reason that they can refuse you access to the vehicle is if they have a exemption card because they have an allergy and they have to register for this and they will have signage saying as much. Because I think their argument sometimes you'll see there's plenty of viral videos that go around of people being refused access to a taxi is maybe the dog will have an accident in the vehicle. But if the dog has an accident, that expense for the cleaning of the vehicle falls to the disabled person. And most service animals are so well trained that that's not going to be an issue. But it's not like the wheelchair accessible expense for a taxi is not the only issue that disabled people are facing with this particular type of transport.
Well, as you were saying earlier about sometimes they won't accept guide dogs or service animals on taxis, but one of the things that was put in place here a number of years ago that the different taxi companies in Northern Ireland, that if you have a certain number of cars within your fleet, at least one of them has to be accessible for disabled people, you know, with the ramps and stuff like that, which I think is great. But again, it doesn't subsist the cost that we have to pay additionally on top of that. But one thing that I did find, and I know certain different people have found it, if I've been outside of Boma, and it's a company that we're using, a company that wouldn't be familiar with, you know, if I'm, say, a different town or city, that's, and I know other people have said the same to me as well, even locally, that they might have a wheelchair taxi, but they have it just because they're meeting the law that they're told to have to, and they refuse to lift anybody disabled because, quote unquote, it's too much of a hassle.
I've heard similar things, and I think this is the problem. A lot of times people will do stuff to meet the bare minimum of what the law says, but proving that you've been discriminated against, sometimes even if you have it on video, or even if someone has said in writing that they have discriminated or that it is discrimination, doesn't necessarily mean that you can bring a case. And I know throughout the UK, and especially within Northern Ireland, it can be very costly because obviously legal aid is not as accessible as it once was. And so proving under the law that you've been discriminated against, taking a case, the additional costs, it can be a lot for the average person to consider doing. And so this can be very off-putting. And so a lot of the time, cases like this, they get away with it because nobody feels that they can bring a case. One of the things when I was researching for this podcast that I found was taxi vouchers, which I think are good in practice, but there are some flaws in the scheme. So Greater Manchester has discounted travel in taxis, private hire vehicles, and community transport schemes. So what you do is you can buy up to £120 worth of these vouchers a year. And if you have a £20 journey, it will work out at about £5. But the thing is, if you rely on taxis a lot, as you would up around Omagh, £120 of vouchers could, you know, that could get used up pretty quickly.
It could be used up in a week in some cases. but again, that's not just some of the internal travel we were doing. You would have maybe more experience for me when it comes to flying, especially between Wales and Ireland. I haven't flown myself in 10 years, but I can only speak anecdotally. I don't know if things have improved since that time, but maybe you can let us know what it's like for yourself that is travelling.
Yes, so it can vary a lot on airport. I find Dublin Airport to be very good because in Dublin Airport, when you go for assistance, they will talk to you about what assistance you require. So do you just need assistance as in getting help to go through security, or do you need assistance all the way to the gate? And one of the things I really like about flying through Dublin Airport is assistance will help me through security, and then they'll basically say you can go shop for a while. And so you can go have a hot chocolate, sit down, and so long as you're going along the Ryanair mile, which if you've been in the airport, you'll know this space. It's a very long stretch and it's a very long walk to get to the gates. If you're going along there, once you finish your shopping, you can go along to a golf cart, which is set aside for people getting assistance. You can explain that you're getting assistance and they will take you to the gate. The other gates are just down a flight of steps or via a lift, and they're not too far from the golf cart. So it feels a lot more like you have options and that you can choose what suits you best. Whereas in other airports, sometimes they will quite literally show up with a wheelchair, regardless of what it is you actually need. So if you're visually impaired, you get a wheelchair. If you're deaf, you get a wheelchair, and they will drop you off at the gate and you will be sitting at the gates for however long it takes. If your flight gets delayed, you'll stay at the gate.
I know on my occasions, I don't know, hopefully it's changed now, but back when I would have been traveling between Belfast International and London Stansted, as I say, they've been coming for a wheelchair for me, even though I have a wheelchair, but they've taken my wheelchair away and put me in another wheelchair, which I'm only 3 foot tall, but they would put me in an adult size wheelchair, which would be uncomfortable. Not only that, but they do the NCC. She said they would leave you at the gate, but what they've done to me in many occasions was leave me in a room on my own, and you could be sitting there for maybe 40 minutes or an hour on your own, wondering what's going on. And I would be quite a confident guy if you know yourself, Felicity. But you do tend to get a few apprehensive about security. You know, it can be very scary, even for a confident person, to sit on their own in an airport, and there are times just somebody walking past them, looking at them.
Yeah, one of the other issues is sometimes you don't get a wheelchair that you can manually propel, and so you need someone to push the chair. And if you are traveling alone and assistance has dropped you off at the gate, what happens if you need the toilet? So I've had this happen to me on occasion where you need the toilet, but you don't know when assistance are going to return and you can't manually propel the wheelchair to get to the bathroom. I was flying back from Germany because I was at a friend's wedding. And the assistance was horrific. So my flight had been delayed and they said that I wasn't allowed to access a wheelchair until an hour before the flight. So only when they were taking me to the gate would I be allowed a wheelchair. Now, this is a very large airport in Dusseldorf. And so we had agreed to go for lunch while we waited, during which my knee decided it wanted to pop out and dislocate. So it's been doing that a lot recently. So in a lot of pain, I sort of made it go back into what looked like a somewhat normal looking knee. And we went back and explained the situation, still didn't get a wheelchair. When we did eventually get a wheelchair, instead of allowing us to use the wheelchair and maybe stay about the shops, we got dropped off at the gate. And it meant then that there was no options to have something to eat or to drink. And so I had medication I needed to take, but I couldn't have anything to drink with it to swallow it or to prepare it. So I made my way to the disabled bathroom and tried to use the water there. But obviously at this point, I'm in a lot of pain, very upset and very grumpy. And it was just a horrific experience. Although when I did fly back into Heathrow, the person who met us at Heathrow was great, helped sort us out for all the vouchers that we hadn't been able to get, and then took me around Marks and Spencer's so I could spend the vouchers and have something to eat, and even brought me over to the bus. Although because I'd been delayed, as we were speaking about earlier, if you pre-book a bus and have a bus that has an accessible seat on it, if you miss your bus, you may not be able to get the next bus. And so I then had to try and change bus and get a new bus that would take me back up to Swansea. And so I think I got in to the airport about 5 o'clock. I didn't get home till nearly 3 a.m. because of the bus issue. It was a lot. And one of the other things about assistance is we tend to take it for granted because you're entitled to assistance under EU law. So if you fly on any airline from an EU airport or you fly on any EU registered airline to an EU airport, you will get special assistance. And you are expected to give 48 hours notice of that. But I usually do give notice, but like if I'm going to be late or there's something happening, you can usually phone them up in Cardiff Airport, which I usually fly out of, has been really good about this. And so that help is available from the moment you arrive at the airport, which Düsseldorf Airport did not do.
Well, I can tell you a story of what happened to me when I flew into Stansted Airport outside London. And myself, and at the time I didn't realize there was another disabled woman on the airplane, but I was up at the front and I was sitting on the plane, which I felt like I was sitting on my own because the staff had all got off, including the pilot. Eventually then somebody came in to clean the airplane for the next flight flying out. And your mum got a bit of a start. She said, "What are you doing here?" And I kind of laughed. And I said, "Well, I was hoping you might be able to answer me that." So she had radioed onto the airport. And it turned out that the staff at Stansted Airport forgot that I was on the plane, forgot I was even coming. So they had nobody ready to get me off the plane. So eventually they did come for me and the other lady. She was a wheelchair user as well. So they got us off the plane, and I don't know if you've ever used this contraption, because they use it in Belfast and quite a few other airports I use it.
Is it the vehicle that has sort of like a lift on it? So it's a car that drives up to the plane and then raises up from the ground?
It is indeed. It's, I don't know about you, but I feel very unsafe on it because it shakes.
It is a bit wobbly. It is a bit wobbly.
And you feel like you're cattle on the way to the market or something. But anyway, that's beside the point, to have it there, and maybe in the future it'll get something better. But when we got onto the airplane, I only had hand luggage, so I didn't have to wait at the conveyor belt to get my luggage. But the other disabled woman was there, and she had luggage, so she had to wait, right, so that's grand. So I said to the guy who was pushing me, "Well, my mate's waiting on me, so I have no luggage, so he's just literally on the other side of that barrier," because every time the barrier would open up, you could see him waiting for me. And he said, "No, well, we can't take you, because she hasn't got her luggage yet." And like, well, fair enough, but you know, I'm not with her. I don't know who she is. And she has somebody assisting her. He goes, "Yes, I know, but this is her policy." And I said, "What policy is that?" Said, "All disabled people go together." And I was like, "Well, I don't know her. My friend's right over there. Why do I have to sit and wait for her to get a bag that hasn't come through yet?" It's just how we do it in Stansted. I got a bit annoyed with that, and I was in the oversized wheelchair, as I was telling you about. So the wheels were very low down, and my arms were very short. So I was basically just touching them with my fingertips, and I started to manually wheel myself over to my friend, which was a fair distance. And I was struggling. I was struggling to bed at the time in a manual wheelchair, which is why I used an electric one. But in this particular wheelchair, it was an absolute torture pain. It didn't even occur to the assistant to, well, maybe this guy's got a point, I'll help him. He just sat there and watched me. So this is the type of thing that disabled people like myself, and I'm sure other people as well, would face in many different airports.
Yeah, I think it's the fact that a lot of the time, airport wheelchairs, they do kind of rob you of your independence in a way because of how they're designed. They're not very user-friendly. And I mean, that's not the only issue when it comes to wheelchairs. If you bring a mobility aid with you to the airport, it's one of the things that I haven't brought my wheelchair through the airport. When I came over to Wales, I came on the boat. But I don't know if I would have the confidence to bring it into an airport. And that's because I've seen so many stories of people having their wheelchairs damaged. And like my chair, if I had bought it brand new, would be at least £2,000. And I don't think I could afford to replace it if it got damaged. And it is a worry. And, you know, they do have insurance, but like by the time you get that money back, if your wheelchair is your main form of independence and you get off the plane and they've broken it, what do you do?
Exactly. I mean, that's a good point. Like, people could be listening to that, who are non-disabled, and could just say what you just said. Well, there's insurance. And I'll say back then, that's grand, but just imagine like a flight got cancelled and you're waiting to get your refund back. Can you tell us just how difficult that was to get your money back because the flight's been cancelled? So this is basically the same. If a wheelchair gets damaged, only the difference is you quite rightly say it, that the wheelchair or the mobility aid is basically our lifeline, whereas, well, you know?
Yeah, and I think different wheelchairs have different mechanisms and different ways of folding them or working with them. And if you don't know, you can break it very easily. And so I've had people sometimes, and don't get me started on the people who just grab the wheelchair and walk away with you in it, which is the equivalent of someone lifting you off the ground and running away with you. You wouldn't do it with a non-disabled person. You shouldn't do it with a disabled person. But the amount of people who they'll be like, oh, I'll help you with that if they see you folding the chair. And then they just grab the chair, even though they don't know anything about the mechanics of the chair, and start pulling at things, which is very unhelpful. And sometimes if you say, thanks, but no thanks, I've got this, they can be very aggressive and angry about it. But like, if you had a piece of specialist equipment, say if someone, I don't know, my car is one of the most expensive things I own, even when I bought it secondhand. But if someone decided just to start tinkering with my car and they had no experience about what my car was like, I think I would be quite upset at them. I mean, that's, I think, the best equivalent I could give to a non-disabled person. You don't see me going over and just suddenly fiddling with your car and expecting it to be fine when I know nothing about it. And it just can be very frustrating. But the one thing about airport travel, obviously, we've mentioned the Sunflower Lanyard, which was a scheme that is throughout UK airports, and it's also in Dublin Airport. It was being brought in last time I flew over. But if you fly outside of the EU and, you know, you may not be able to get assistance, or you may have to pay for the assistance. So don't take it as granted that you're going to get it. If you're traveling outside of the EU or anywhere else, do just check what rights you have and what services are available, because you may get a nasty shock when you land.
Just before we sort of log off now on this section of the podcast, people may be thinking, well, you know, there's different forms of transport today. We've got TransLink, you've got Virgin Rail, but we shouldn't maybe gloss over the fact that there's also community transport available out there for disabled people as well. I just wondered, have you ever used any yourself, and how you find it?
I've used community transport, I think, once or twice. I don't use it very regularly because when I'm back home, I have my car, and my car is my main lifeline for getting out and about. But when I've used it, it's been very friendly, quite affordable. And I've never really had a negative experience. I don't think it's as flexible maybe as having a car and other options, but it is a good alternative. And, you know, it's community-based and it's a great way to network and get to meet people locally.
Right, you find it depends on what your lifestyle is. You know, if you're not somebody that's out and about maybe as much as you are or I am, then it's a great service because it is very affordable, it's very good. The reason it wouldn't work for myself, and I'm sure for you too, Felicity, it's because I'm quite a busy person that I become quite finished. I couldn't tell you what I'm going to be doing in an hour time, never mind tomorrow. I find with the local transport, the community transport here, you might have to give sort of a week's notice to say to do traveling. Now, don't get me wrong, I think the cost of the travel is 50p, which, you know, you can't argue with. You know, and I think it's brilliant for the people of the streets, but other people just mightn't be as acceptable for their needs. And as well as that, you could be dropped at the last minute because somebody has to make an emergency hospital visit or a GP visit, which I totally understand, I would totally accept, I wouldn't take that away. But it just means then it adds for somebody else another complication that, well, I had this plan, what am I going to do now? But again, as I say, the hospital and GP visit, they should be, and quite rightly, are the priority when it comes to community transport.
Yeah, I think if I was to have one takeaway from the topic on transport, it's mostly that I think we definitely need transport to be more accessible. A lot of disabled people, myself included, are anxious and are nervous about traveling. So I once traveled down to London and the train that I got stopped at a non-accessible platform, which had steps going up from it. And, you know, there's little things like that that are very problematic. And I don't really understand why we haven't got all platforms that can be accessible. That is something that could be done. So there's little issues and there's bigger issues, but like that is quite a nerve-wracking thing when you're taking public transport, because you are kind of taking a bit of a gamble. Will they remember you're there? Will I be able to get off this train or off this bus? You know, lots of different issues and hiccups that a non-disabled person doesn't have to think about. But in London, they do have a London taxi card, which provides door-to-door transport in London taxis, which is at a lower cost. And it's 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And I think that's definitely something that I would like to see maybe considered in Northern Ireland and wider, because obviously we've spoken about taxis maybe doing fare and a half. And there are additional costs with getting a wheelchair accessible taxi or even trying to get a taxi that will accept a service animal. And so the taxi card scheme, I think, could be something that would be useful and would complement public transport such as buses and trains in Northern Ireland, because as you've said yourself, if you miss a bus, sometimes you have to take a taxi to get home.
One thing that I just want to touch on, but you just said there today, regarding the, when you got dropped off at a train station, that you were on the wrong side and it was totally inaccessible for you to get over the steps. Now, just literally this last half hour, I'd come across a campaign called the Step-Free Access to All Stations and on All Trains. So what they're trying to do, they're actually doing a campaign, and they have a petition now that train stations need to evolve and to be redesigned to avoid the problem that you have experienced there, Felicity. So what we'll do is we'll drop a link to that for some of the podcasts as well. So I would encourage all people within the UK to sign up, because this is to be a good voice to shout for that.
Yeah, and I think you can get a step-free map for the London Underground, although I would do caution with this in that when I'm at the university, I do a separate radio show and we explored the London Underground and the issues of accessibility with actual Londoners. And it turns out that some of the step-free stations are not as step-free as they advertise. So just be cautious of that.
Well, I've definitely found that myself on travels, and not just from public transport, but certainly different venues and business premises I've been to where they proclaim that they're disabled, accessible, friendly, and when you get there, it's not quite what they say. But one of the things I would encourage people to take away from this section in a way would be to try and organise what we have here, MTAC, not just on a local level, but say on an all Scottish level, an all Ireland level, an all Wales level, an all England level. So you can sort of talk to the government, talk to the local company, and try and get it uniform, because to make the trains and the buses, the airplanes, more accessible for your needs and for your travel. Plus, like, we're lucky here, as I say, in Northern Ireland, that we've just got TramLink. You know, we do have private companies, but TramLink is basically the main one and the one that everybody uses. But as I say, across water in the UK would be different companies. So it would be even more crucial to have that point, so that you can have a bit more uniformity across these organisations, so that you're not, as you say, travelling on one train, which is great, then you get off and you try to get on the next one, and it's an absolute disaster. Or if you have to get a bus link between the two bus stations, trains or whatever, there's a smooth journey and you're not sort of having to book everything separately.
Yeah, it does seem to be, I think, slowly improving because there are campaigns, like you pointed out, and people doing things, but nothing changes without people power. And so, as the disability slogan says, nothing about us without us. And I think that's really an ethos that we should be taking when it comes to communicating with travel companies and just travel companies more generally, because obviously when we've talked about the Purple Pound, we are one fifth of the population and we do play a large part in the economy.
I just think sometimes that gets overlooked about or forgotten about. But again, it's just something that we just have to keep fighting, keep up to remind people that, you know, we're here, we're not going to go away, and nothing without us. So we will see you now shortly after this little break, where we're going to be talking just a little bit about what's been going on in our lives this week. So listen to this little break and we'll see you on the other side.
Welcome back. At this point of the podcast, we usually just have a bit of an overview of how our weeks have been going, any fun news that we've seen, any tidbits from our own personal lives. So I believe, Dermot, you've been doing an online course this week.
Indeed, I have. I've been doing, for the last 3 weeks, now 4 weeks actually, I've been doing a course via Zoom to an organisation in Belfast called CrackNA, which stands for Cultivate Respect, Appreciate Inclusion in Communities in Northern Ireland. And what they're doing, they're piloting a level 3 course, Cultural Awareness Training. So we're bringing sort of different ethnic groups and different types of people from across Northern Ireland together on a 6-week course, which is a A-level equivalent. So what I'm doing now is I'm hoping to train myself up that I can actually become a trainer. So with different communities, with people from Africa, people from Asia, who are now living in Northern Ireland, and I'm going to be representing disabled people. So what I will be hoping to do, once I get this training qualification, is I can go to businesses and advise them about disability, train them up on how to be more aware. And the same with all the different communities, they're going to be training up for their aspect. So as I say, we're now just finished the unit 1.3. I'm busy now writing up a little bit of information. So actually what I'm writing now over this weekend is about ICANN, which is a festival run in Fermanagh and Omagh for people with disabilities, getting them out and trained to talk about what it's all about and stuff like that there. But then we do have to talk about two other different types of culture. So one thing that I'm going to talk about is cosplay, which we talked about last week. One of the tutors had actually listened to my podcast last week and thought that this would be an excellent topic for me to cover, especially with regard to disabled people. So what I'm going to be talking about, it's not about the accessibility, but it's more about the inclusion of disabled people within cosplay and how it breaks down barriers and allows other people to come up to us and open up a conversation about not only about the character that we're talking about, that we're portraying, but it also allows them to, for the sake of that 10-minute conversation, makes them freer to talk about asking me questions about my disability, and it sort of treats me as an equal. So I will be talking a little bit about that there, and also about the GAA, and about club football, World Cup football within the GAA, and about how it opens up for different type of culture coming in. One aspect that I will be talking about is, within that, is a new Gaelic football team that has been set up in East Belfast, and also about the Black and Irish community who are in Ireland and how they are also getting involved with the GAA as well. And that's really just about what I've been sort of getting up to this last week. But Felicity, I believe you're also beginning to study in yourself, and you're just finishing your chapter for your PhD. And not only that, you have a bit of a problem with your diploma recently too. So I think our listeners would love to hear those stories about that.
Yeah, so I am on my final year of my PhD, or what I hope is my final year. And I'm currently writing up some of my final chapters. It's been a bit difficult due to lockdown, because usually I'd be going out and doing research in archives. But at the minute, I nearly have a 20,000 word chapter finished, nearly. And it's been a bit difficult this week because we've had builders and painters outside. But at 8 o'clock this week, one of the first things early morning, my front door opened and a random man let himself into my flat because the university had told him that nobody lived here. And I was aware that we were due to have a plumber over. I just didn't know when. I just had a vague week when he was going to arrive. I did not expect him to just be allowed, you know, carte blanche access to the flat at 8 in the morning. So as you can imagine, it's a very rude awakening.
Were you still in bed, or were you up?
Oh, I was still in bed. I was in pajamas, in bed, not expecting anyone. So I think he realized when he opened the door, because they'd given him keys, and he'd opened the door, let himself in, and he probably saw like the coats hanging up on our coat rack and thought, oh dear, there might be someone here. So he did then shout out. He was opening and closing doors randomly in the flat to sort of see where the kitchen was. And thankfully, he didn't open the bedroom door, because like I think my heart would have stopped.
That sounded like a very traumatic morning, isn't it? A
definite surprise.
But I hope it didn't impact your final chapter too much, and you were able to get a bit of work done there too.
Yeah, I mean, it's slow going, but I mean, it's really interesting. And the chapter is on disabled people who were travelling in pursuit of health in the 19th century and all the different types of treatment that they would use, such as climatotherapy or hydrotherapy. So the idea of drinking certain mineral waters or a change of air or a change of temperature being good for your health. It's really quite an interesting one, but it does seem that people generally were constantly moving, trying to find it, because there was different fads and different sort of different temperatures or different health resorts that would become popular for different reasons. And so there wasn't really a fixed consensus from doctors as to what was the best for people. It's a very fascinating area, because some of the treatments are a bit strange. There's one which involves bath filled with pine needles because it has resin in it. And apparently the pine needles release, like, it's almost like aromatherapy, a pine smell. There's another one where they use like olive oil. I mean, there are a wide range, but they also have a really interesting selection of bathing options. They had literally these pipes that would go around your feet, and they're punctured with tiny little needle size holes, and it just sprays out water everywhere at you.
I'm not sure it's either going to be very horrific to explain or very enjoyable. I'm just not sure which one.
Well, some of the treatments involved going into very cold water, and some of them going to very hot water. So they would sort of heat you up to, I think it was like 200 degrees Fahrenheit was one of the temperatures of the rooms that people would go into, which is quite hot. So like, it's a difficult one, but like, I really enjoyed one of them, because like at the end of it, it was all like, after he's done his treatment of sort of, you know, the hot room, then the cold bath, he lies back and he has a cigar and reads a book. And it doesn't feel like something you should really be doing if you're seeking health with a cigar, but you know, this is the 19th century. It's just generally fascinating, because at one point there were some people who thought that travel on a railway and accidents on a railway caused a particular injury called railway spine. Yeah, so railway spine was an injury, although some people thought that the movement of trains and carriages actually had a stimulating effect and could be conducive to health. So like, there's a lot of different theories on travelling. And
maybe that's why we don't have any trains here in the northwest of Ireland.
Perhaps. But it fits well with the theme that we're doing this week of travel. It's very fascinating. Just, it does seem a bit gendered though, because most of the books that are written about traveling as a person with a disability are written by men. And interestingly, a lot of the women who wrote about traveling, they would be disabled women who found that traveling, they felt better in themselves when they traveled. But because of certain ideas of a woman's space being in a domestic sphere, they would take on certain tones in their writing. So they had to kind of be exceptional. And within the media, they would be sort of seen in a more masculine way. And so topics of being unwell didn't really get written into that, because unfortunately, there were some who saw being unwell or being disabled as a more effeminate thing at this point. But I mean, these are all broad statements, because like, I can't fit the entire chapter into like a quick 5-second overview. But the 19th century is a very fascinating time, and it's a period when our understanding of what average or normative or what the normal body really began to occur.
I know, some of the conversations that we've been having, and some of the material that you've sent me over the last year or two about what you were hitting regarding disability. You've actually educated me quite a bit on disability history, and in fact, even in this podcast, I wasn't aware that Florence Nightingale was disabled. And that's something that maybe I should have known, and more disabled people should have known. But that's all to do with the narrative that's been put out there and how it has been written, but it has been educational. And again, even some of the stuff you've been telling me today about what you're writing about Star Trek, unfortunately, it's very interesting to you. In fact, even though I'm not a Star Trek person or Trekkie, it's definitely something that I look forward to reading in the future as well. So I wish you luck with the rest of your chapter. Now, I think that really comes to the end of our podcast today, but let's see if there's any sort of feedback you'd like our listeners to take away with them.
I think just knowing their rights when they're going on public transport, as well as checking out different information with the different companies that you're traveling with, because different companies will have different policies and different approaches. As I've discovered since coming over to Wales and now having to have quite an extensive collection of disabled persons' cards. But yeah, do research, get to know your right. And I find that the sunflower lanyard has been very helpful and is nationally recognised. So that is definitely something that if you're feeling that you don't have a lot of confidence on public transport and you have an invisible disability, it would be worth maybe getting, and you can get them for free in most big supermarkets.
That's definitely something I'll definitely go for myself, because I've definitely, since COVID anyway, I've become more aware of them. Unfortunately, sometimes it's been for the wrong reasons, for the wrong people acquiring them. But overall, it's something that disabled people should take with them, make life a lot easier. But one thing I would actually ask people to take away from the podcast, I'm involved with UNTAC, and if anybody has any issues with transport, they should contact different members of UNTAC just to highlight some of the issues that they have in their area. But I would also encourage that other countries or other regions, say for example yourself in Wales, Felicity, is to see what organisations are out there, because it's a lot easier to get things done in public transport if you're working through an organisation. So until next week, I will see you soon. Take care, look after yourself, and have a good week. Felicity?
Yep, was it? You can always find us on Twitter. You can find Dermot at MyWayAccess, and you can find me at CronfabNI and at McKee_Felicity. So you can continue the conversation with us on social media.